You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
Hey, good morning. Welcome back to Up North News Radio. Kid tested, mother approved, brought to you by Courier Newsroom and carried by our friends on the Civic Media Radio Network. At 7:06 on this Thursday, April 17th, nice to have you along. Waiting in the wings is our friend Joe Zepecki, who is going to join us live to answer the question, will he or won't he run for state Democratic Party chair? Spoiler alert, you should listen. Brittany will have our forecast for us. At 7:30, we'll have Emily Berge, who has announced her candidacy for the 3rd Congressional District in Western and Central Wisconsin. Luke Mathers will be along as well. But first, let's turn to Brittany for the weather, where, again, we're not in the 20s anymore, and we're getting something more traditionally spring, which also includes all those April showers with maybe a little April thunder along the way as well, perhaps.
Yes, we got we've got a little bit of everything going on. I mean, the sun first, then we've got the rain, then we'll get the green up, then some flowers soon. I mean, it's all worth it. Trust me.
And breezy too, right? We get the wind as well, which, by the way, means that before we get any significant rain, don't be burning anything out there.
Exactly. We've had a record number of wildfires here in Wisconsin. I mean, just yesterday we had 22 wildfires that burned 57 acres. That was just yesterday. And we've got the winds still blowing about 30 miles per hour. They're out of the south now, which is going to warm us up today to the low to mid 60s. So a little bit warmer than we've been. Temperatures right now are starting off in the upper 20s into Ashland to the mid 40s in La Crosse right now. And of course, those showers and storms are moving in. But before we get to that, I wanted to let you know, I saw on a birdcast that a major migration of birds has moved into the state and into the region. Last night, there were about 166 million of them in flight. So spring is really here.
A bird cast?
Yes. Oh. Isn't that, well, you could see them on radar.
Oh, I thought it was like a podcast hosted by birds.
I know. Here, I was kind of thinking like Foghorn Leghorn maybe would introduce it or something. But
that's
so funny. Back to the weather.
Yes. So we've got a low pressure system targeting us. While it's bright and beautiful right now, this is not going to last, unfortunately. We're going to be overcast and cloudy by the afternoon with already some scattered showers and storms that want to try to spark up late this morning down south, working its way across the southern areas, and then more sparking up this afternoon, western areas of the state, working central through the evening and into the eastern areas tonight. And then more storms start to fire up overnight and through early tomorrow morning. So we are in a marginal risk for them to be strong to severe on the western slide today. Now, that would just bring some gusty winds and hail. Tomorrow is a bigger concern because high temperatures tomorrow are going to be completely different. Far north, we're going to be in the low 40s. Far southeast, low 80s. So when a cold front slams into that, if any storms spark up tomorrow from that, we are looking at those with the potential of hail, high winds, and maybe a tornado or two as well. So we've got the spring weather in place. We will dry things out for Saturday, stay partly cloudy for Sunday before more rain rolls in on Sunday night.
All right. From Rob, good morning from Tigerton. It's sunny and 33 degrees. I have a doctor's appointment in Shawano and then a walk along the Wolf River, getting ready for the sturgeon run in a few weeks. He says, tonight I take the advanced severe weather class online from the National Weather Service office in Green Bay. I want to learn more about the science of weather that Brittany got me interested in.
Yay!
And many farmers around the Tigerton area have begun doing field work, and the lawns are starting to turn green in places. So spring has definitely sprung. And the meteorologist here will confirm that. All right, Brittany.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much. We'll talk to you later.
Have a good day.
All right. Let's not waste a moment here. We've got Joe Zepecki standing by to talk to us. Well, usually he's joining us on Thursday to talk about stuff in the news. Maybe it's time. It's time that Joe make a little news. So, hello, Joe. How are you?
I'm good. I'm a little tired. It has been a long couple of days. Not enough sleep, but that's okay. It's worth it because of what comes next.
That would be par for the course if you decide to run for state chair of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin, which you said last week you were interested in. So how's that interest level now, Joe? Will you or won't you?
Well, you put the news up front. I'm in. We're going to do this thing. And, you know, it's taken a week because I wanted to talk to people across the state from every corner, across our coalition, north, south, east, west, rural, urban, black, white, Latino, AAPI, you name it. We have a big, beautiful coalition, the Democratic Party, and we need every single part of it to win. And that's what this contest for WISDEM's chair is about. It is about building on what Ben Wickler and his team have succeeded on in the last 6 years. It's about refining the way that we organize and the way that we support local parties and local organizations. And it's about fundamentally rebuilding the way we communicate as a party. There is a real appetite for that. There is a real appetite for a fresh perspective and someone from outside the direct party apparatus, which is the perspective that I bring to this. And I'm just overwhelmed to have the support and encouragement, not just of people I've been talking to, but of the first 20 people who are day one endorsers. They are on the team, and that is part of today's news. And I'm happy to get into that, but it was important to me to be with you like I am every Thursday, because we got to keep our word and we got to reach out way beyond Madison and Milwaukee to strengthen our party and grow and win elections. And that's why Up North is so important. It's why civic media is so important. And so I just appreciate you having me on and doing all the work all these years.
Well, you've clearly done some of the work, because this is quite the list of day one endorsers, ranging from a former state chair, Linda Honnold, to state rep Fran Hong from Madison, former rep Stan Grzynski, Aaron Forrest, former Emerge Wisconsin executive director, Angela Lang from Bloc, Dr. Kristen Lyerly, we all know her, former Regent John Miller, former Wausau Mayor Katie Rosenberg, former One Wisconsin Now Executive Director Scott Ross, State Rep Chris Sinicki, who is also the Milwaukee Democratic Party Chair, and the former Milwaukee Democratic Party Chair Chris Walton, and on the list goes. Why are these folks there? I mean, a lot of folks know you, a lot of folks like you, but you have to be able to message, you have to be able to organize, you have to be able to fundraise. What is it that you would like to think all these folks are seeing in you?
Well, I think and hope that they have built trust in when I say something, I mean it. When I commit to something, I do it. And we don't have time for anything but that. And one of the things that I want to say right up top is one of my top priorities is making sure that the race to succeed Ben Wickler does not divide our party, that we do not fracture. The way I've been putting it, I talked to all three of the other candidates in this race last night and told them, this is about more than who is the next chair of the Democratic Party. It's that whoever is the next chair has so much work to do, so little time to waste, that we cannot afford to have whoever it is waste time trying to stitch the party back together. And I think the folks who are with me already, and the folks who encouraged me to get into this and who, you know, are thinking about joining the team maybe on day two, they understand that I am someone who tries to see the whole field, that knows it's not about, you know, the four of us individuals who are running for chair today. Maybe there will be more. It is really about the broader party. It is about building the party county by county. It is about, you know, winning elections and ensuring that every single day we are taking the fight to MAGA, Donald Trump, and the Republicans who are enabling him to do the most un-American things you can imagine. This is a five-alarm fire. It feels like we have been living in that kind of alarm for way too long. It is exhausting. Sometimes people need to tap out. My approach to that is you got to build a bigger team so that people can take a play off, and we all got to do more. We all got to do everything we can. One of the things that I think I can do is help be a voice that puts this party, you know, on an even surer footing going forward. And I think the folks who are with me understood the nuance of what I was saying. There are things that Ben Wickler and his crew have done that we don't need to monkey with. The fundraising success has led to a lot of electoral success. We're going to leave that as close to exactly what it is as we can when it comes to how we organize year round and how we support local parties. It's good. It's not perfect. There are county parties who need more support, who want to grow and do more things and innovate and have more autonomy. And that's a conversation we need to have. And those are refinements we can make and adjustments we can make. And when it comes to how we communicate, we got to kind of burn it down and start all over. And we got to be really clear-eyed about that. We have a messaging problem, and it's broader than just the words we use and the order in which we put them. And I can't wait to get to work changing the culture and building out the way we communicate.
We're talking to Joe Zepecki, who is throwing his hat in the ring to run for state chair of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. Pick your metaphor. It's either walking and chewing gum at the same time, threading the needle, the right sets of balance. What I'm getting at is taking the fight to Republicans, pointing out the many foibles of Donald Trump, Robin Voss, and all that, versus being proactive with this message of this is what Democrats are for. And it seems like any discussion about Democratic messaging leads to that. Like, too much time is being spent on one or the other. We talk every Thursday morning about finding that balance. How do you communicate the way that you feel like you can strike the right balance for voters, that they get that you're anti-Trump, but that you're also for them?
You have to do both all the time, every day. And what I mean by that is, there are people in our movement and in our coalition who are outraged, rightly, every single day by what Donald Trump is doing. They need to be empowered to go and say that and say why, with credibility and authenticity, because they care about it. And there are people who are part of movement politics and part of the progressive movement who do it because they want to make public policy at the local level, at the state level, at the federal level. And that is where their passion is. We need them to communicate that and feel empowered to be a messenger for what we're trying to build here. You have to do both. That is the way the attention economy works. It is the way the information space works. And it is the only way to operate in an environment that is very different than when even I started my career. And without getting into how old you are, buddy, when you started your career too.
Yes. I was just having that conversation yesterday with your wife on Climate Check about issues that were an issue 20 years ago now when I was running for legislature, and how some things have changed over time. Joe Zepecki is our guest. He is running for chair of the State Democratic Party here in Wisconsin. We are going to continue that conversation in just a moment. First, I got to tell you about the Brewers game last night against Detroit, or yesterday afternoon, where Oliver Dunn steps up to the plate with a torpedo bat in hand, a runner on third. Is he swinging for the fences with the torpedo bat? No. Lays down a perfect bunt, scores Garrett Mitchell. Three more homers later, the Brewers win against Detroit 5-1. They're off today. They start a series against the Athletics tomorrow at American Family Field. Back more with Joe Zepecki after this. You're up north.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
That one is Dave Edmonds, who turns 81 years old today. This is Up North News Radio. It's Tuesday morning, April 15th, and the Brewers are back on the radio this evening against the Detroit Tigers after getting spanked last night. We'll try to get back on track here. Coverage on several Civic Media stations. Head over to civicmedia.us for more. Coverage at 6:05 today, and it's a noon hour game tomorrow. So a little matinee baseball from American Family Field. All right, we're going to talk to Sean O'Malley here in just a bit and talk about the bond market sell-off and the tariffs. Sean has over 35 years experience in financial services. He's worked in anti-money laundering, operational risk management, financial risk management, data analytics. He's been a data governance officer at Citigroup, a research director for compliance and fraud management at IDC. He's worked with several of the big names out on Wall Street, the pride of Hudson, Wisconsin, who now joins us to talk again about trade and and tariffs and stocks, and this time bonds as well. Sean O'Malley, how are you?
I'm doing well, Pat. How are you this morning?
I'm doing all right, but I'm also, how do I put this? I mean, there are people who are like every hour trying to move their money to whatever appears to be safe now, and I'm much more of a no place is safe, so I'm just going to kind of ride this out. But you kind of do this for a living, not financial planning, but you right. know about moving money. Have you just personally, have you found yourself busier than usual trying to make sure that your nest egg is in good shape?
Not myself personally, Pat. I tend to be fairly prudent about my selections. So I made some changes after the election to reduce my exposure significantly. So I can certainly sit out the entirety of Trump's term and several years after without being overly concerned about whether the values go up or down. I knew that there was the potential for a lot of volatility. And so I said, I'm not going to hang around for the volatility. I'm going to play it a little bit safer than that, because I don't want to feel like, and I'm sure a lot of people do feel like they're trying to hop from one foot and like, is now the right time to go in this direction or that direction, financially speaking, with your decisions. I'm sorry to say I don't have any words of comfort for anyone today.
No. And look, the conventional wisdom for, amateurs, myself included, was, well, if the stocks are getting a little bit too risky, then you move things over into bonds. Or the term I always hear on, channels like CNBC and others are, flight to quality and, or safe havens or safe harbors. And that almost always includes U.S. bonds. And yet we heard last week about how the bond markets were being rocked and bonds were being sold off. And that was finally the first time that the Trump White House seemed to be like, oh, is it us? Are we the problem? And maybe they're not going as extreme as they had thought that they were going to go. And in part, this sell-off in the bond market might have helped do that. So I wanted a little bit of background on you on, what is it that makes bonds such a secure investment, and why do they seem less so now?
Right. That's a really good question, and you bring up an interesting point that I'll get to in a second. But first, let's answer the question why bonds are considered, safer. Typically, especially U.S. government treasuries are what are the risk-free rate, if you will, in the investment selections that personal investors can choose from. So when you're talking about, that flight to quality, which is used a lot, that basically is telling you, yeah, everybody's getting spooked by what's going on in the stock market, so they're reducing their stock exposure and they're increasing their bond exposure. So what you'll see happen is that the prices of stocks will go down, and the money will move from stocks into bonds. And so as the bonds get bought up more, their price goes up. So get it? Stocks go down, bonds go up. That's the typical pattern. Unfortunately, what we've seen, and this is of concern to several people who are even, more knowledgeable than myself, who have very big positions on Wall Street, is that we are starting to see that stock prices and bond prices are moving in tandem. So when both stocks are going down and bonds are going down, that's usually a sign that you want to start paying attention, really close attention, because you're looking at a potential, financial stressed situation. The last time this happened was like in the financial crisis of 2008, much more exaggeratedly than what we've seen now. But people are looking at it saying, well, we really haven't seen this sort of pattern for quite some time. And the fact that we are seeing prices move in tandem is of concern.
And that's all based in, the volatility that we have seen here, in that what this really rocks, and something that we never thought would be rocked, would be this phrase, the full faith and credit of the U.S. government. Now, I know we often hear that about, say, the FDIC with bank deposits, but again, about U.S. bonds, the U.S. was seen as, they pay their debts. They don't, you know, they don't break those kinds of agreements. But now you see what, you know, President Trump has done with, you know, contracts with farmers and everything with the tariff situation, mm-hmm. breaking agreements that he signed, like the USMCA with Canada and Mexico. And you start to see where other countries would hold U.S. bonds. But now they're looking at the U.S. and going, does the full faith and credit of the U.S. government, is it still a thing?
Right. And I think what you're raising is part of, it's sort of like the tip of the iceberg. The larger issue is, given the political realignment globally for the United States under this administration, you now have a lot of, you know, former closest allies, thinking of, you know, Canada in particular, but also many of the European Union nations. They feel very alienated. They feel betrayed, let's be honest. And they're not sure that they can trust this version of the United States. So yes, what we're seeing is a pullback from what they would normally buy, because what's happening is that the world is starting to redefine itself in a business and trade environment whereby the United States, instead of being at the center of it all, we're just being circumvented. Everybody's working around us, not with us and through us anymore. And so that is one of the big reasons that we're seeing for big changes in purchasing. We're seeing big changes in terms of not just purchasing of bonds, but I mean purchasing of goods and services. And it will have an economic impact on this country that's it's not going to be positive, unfortunately.
And I guess the term I'm looking for is overreaction or maybe overcorrection. I'm not sure. But for folks who are saying, well, what, should the U.S. have done nothing? No, that's not ever what I've been saying. There's a place for trade negotiations and trade agreements. And I have said plenty of times that we should try to strengthen some of these trade agreements, because what I'd be saying to other countries is, if you want access to this market, and this is one of the greatest consumer markets on the planet, but if you want access to this market, you've got to play by certain rules. It might be about, you know, environmental protections or employee protections or things like that. So there's definitely room for it, but it's entirely different when you say, actually, we're going to slap 145% tariff on you, China. And small wonder that now, instead of wanting to negotiate with this, you know, great consumer market here, that they say, well, let's bypass this. Let's go to Brazil, get our soybeans there instead.
Right. The simple fact is that, putting it really bluntly, the United States has become too much of a pain in the butt to deal with, both politically and financially. Because there's no certainty with respect to what the future is, or whether if you make a deal today, is it still good tomorrow with this administration? You know, as you point out, yes, they continue to backtrack. There's a real lack of clarity, which is why, you know, I mean, the tariff situation with Liberation Day on April 2nd, you know, put them in place, stock market goes down a huge amount. And so a couple of days later, they take them off, stock market comes back, not quite all the way, because you still have a 10% tariff globally. And as you pointed out, China's at 145%. But what's the point of the tariff? What is the purpose? Right now, it's just acting as a tax. It's like trying to drive forward in your car with your parking brake on. You're not going to go as fast, and you're certainly not going to get the gas mileage. And a lot of other drivers on the road are deciding, you know, I don't think we want to be on the same road with this particular driver.
Let's address, you know, one of our more conservative listeners, Mark in Sussex, puts this on the text line, says, do other countries still respect us? Seriously, over 130 countries now want a discussion on tariffs. Many agree some tariffs are good, but nobody except Trump had the guts to do it. Thanks, Trump, or thanks, Donald John Trump. So Mark in Sussex is making the point that Trump and others are claiming, is that now suddenly everybody wants to rush to the U.S. and make a deal with them. I certainly hear Trump saying that, like, everybody wants to make a deal with Trump now. I love when he talks about himself in third person, but I don't know that I'm necessarily seeing that. And you're saying that it appears everybody's trying to, you know, basically circumvent the U.S. at least for now.
Right. Yeah. The only person who is telling you that 130 countries are trying to renegotiate tariffs is Donald Trump himself. Mm-hmm. You will notice that none of those 130 countries are saying, oh, yes, you know, we're in the market to renegotiate our tariffs. I'm sorry to say that's just a fallacy. Not the first time that we've experienced that with this particular president.
Now, however, you do have some of these countries appear to have learned this much. If you do even the least amount possible, or maybe a little bit more than the least amount possible, to move off of, you know, status quo, that Trump will call that a victory, even though, again, it makes almost no actual significant difference. Yeah. But if he's able to prove that something came off of status quo, however little, he counts that as a victory. And it does not necessarily do anything to offset trade imbalances or consumer prices.
Yeah, absolutely. So what you're seeing is that there is this opinion that, you know, we're going to get somewhere with tariffs. But again, tariffs have to have a purpose. We don't have a clear purpose behind these tariffs, number one. Number two, we have global tariffs of 10%. All that is a 10% tax on American consumers. Okay, so you want to know about what your inflation expectations are going to be? Somewhere around 10% is probably going to be a pretty good bet. It'll probably be a little bit shy of that because it's not going to be everything. Some things are made completely domestically without any sort of input. But the simplified version that Donald Trump puts out that ignores international trade, how complex supply chains are, you know, it's not just, oh, you know, I bought this and it says American made on it. Okay, well, were any of the parts from a foreign country? Was the machinery that was used to make that, was part of it, you know, from a foreign country? You know, there are so many intricacies when you try to kind of disentangle everything. It gets to be a very complex picture. There are a couple of companies that have products that are designed to help you through this, but really only at a level one on supply chain, trying to get level two, level three, really all the way down this, you know, rabbit hole of where does everything come from when you're looking at final products, goods out in the marketplace. It's very, very complex. And I think people like the simplified picture. Unfortunately, that's not really an accurate picture. And we'll be finding out as I'm sure these 10% global tariffs will be in place and inflation will continue to go up and economic growth will be under pressure. It's probably not going to grow as much as it could have.
And even if there were 130 different agreements in the works here, it would take quite a while to get back to whatever we would call normal to undo this damage. Sean O'Malley, thank you again for all of the insight. It's always great catching up. And I sense we're going to be talking again real soon as markets and conditions continue to move. Have a great day.
You too. Take care.
All right. When we come back, we'll talk to Chad Holmes, find out what he's talking about next on his show in Wausau. And if you're not in the Wausau area, catch it on the Civic Media app. This is Up North News Radio, live from Chippewa Falls on the Civic Media Radio Network. I know you're half expecting to see Lester Holt or something right about here. This is the election theme that NBC News has been using since 1976. And we play it here because this is the anniversary of the birth of Henry Mancini. And Henry Mancini composed this. He had a theme for NBC Nightly News that was used throughout a big chunk of the 1970s, along with all the movie tracks and the shows and the hits that made the charts back in the 1960s. All coming from one very prolific composer, Henry Mancini, who had been born on this day. All right, if you know nothing else about me and about Up North News and about this radio show, it is that our mission in life is to overcome this particular mindset. State politics is boring. The legislature's boring. The state budget is boring. Nobody wants to talk about this. And then people like me step in and say, wait a minute. The state budget, the state legislature takes the money that we pay in taxes, sales taxes, income taxes, fees, everything else, and can do a lot of really important good stuff with that. Things that are good for our kids, for our schools, for our healthcare, for our infrastructure, or they can, you know, put it down a rat hole, shall we say. And those things don't just happen. Those decisions aren't some kind of predestined magic depending on who's in the legislature. Lobbying still does some good, and not just the lobbyists with, you know, nice suits and all that, but the lobbying with a lowercase L that's done by grassroots groups, by constituents, by members of these groups, and by some amazingly dedicated people who want to make sure that our state legislature is doing things with our resources that make our state a great place to live. And two of the people who do that perhaps more actively and with more passion than almost anybody I know join us for another visit with an update on their lowercase L lobbying of the legislature. Robert Craig from Citizen Action and Heather Dubois-Bornon from Wisconsin Public Education Network. Good morning to both of you. How are you?
I'm good.
All right. And Heather, I think that you are on mute, but you jump off of there and you say good morning whenever you like as well. There you are. How are you?
I was just saying good morning. Good morning, no, Pat. Good morning, Robert.
It's so nice to have you guys back here. Tony up in Ashland puts it on YouTube. Well, who cares if we have daycare or roads or we clear cut the forests? Not important at all. Sarcasm, he says. And it's so true. These things matter. You know what? I actually want to start there. If I'm going to start all highfalutin like this, I'm going to do this. Heather, why do you do what you do? You could do a lot of other things. Why are you so passionate about doing this gig, advocating for the education of our kids?
I want to pick up from what you said, Pat. Why should we care? There are so many things that people care about, but nobody has time to care about all the things. So we need to focus on the things that we care about the most and then partner with others who care about the other things that we care about so that we can all get all the things that we actually need in our budgets, in our schools, in our communities, in our families and homes, and make sure that we are fighting together for all of the things it really takes to make for thriving communities. It's really such a simple principle, and I'm just driven by a desire to see better across our communities and to demand better of leaders who seem content to ensure that we don't have the conditions to thrive where we live in Wisconsin.
And Robert, I know you like me. We like to talk about the policies, the issues, rather than ourselves. But I mean, you have been also a leader in the grassroots field for so long. Why? What motivated you to start doing all this in the first place?
And you made a distinction, rightly so, Pat, between small L lobbyists and the ones in the fancy suits. They're called contract lobbyists. And some of them are very nice people. You and Heather and I know them, Pat, but they're mercenaries. They're hired guns and they're working for people, organizations, corporations that have a big interest in government. It isn't for the common good, right? So the lobbyists like Heather and I, we're working for grassroots groups of people that are not in it for themselves. They're in it for their communities and for the common good. So Heather mentioned education. I would just say on healthcare, we have the most expensive and unaffordable healthcare system in the world, and a lot of people are left out. The only reason a lot of people have access to healthcare is because of what our federal and state government do. And they're making decisions right now that affect whether people have a fundamental right. And if you don't have access to health and good health care, then you can't live a life of freedom and being able to pursue your own destiny and your own dreams. Health is everything. And the state budget is going to have a huge influence on that, particularly the decision on whether or not to finally expand Badger Care in Wisconsin.
So we're going to get into more of this with healthcare and with education in a moment. But I want to, Robert, start with you on something that we talked about in the last hour in our climate check segment. And at the risk of oversimplifying things, I talked about the impression that I had in something like wetlands protection. And that now that is seen as a relatively bipartisan issue. The New York Times had a story about, it might have been the Journal Sentinel had a story about how Wisconsin's become this bipartisan model because of a bill that passed unanimously that offered grants to protect wetlands as a way of mitigating against flash floods as part of climate change. And I said, wait a minute. When I ran for the legislature 20 years ago, one of the things that I always heard from the other side of the political fence was mocking the idea of protecting wetlands. They would put like a canoe in a dry culvert and say, how is this a navigable body? And you fast forward 20 years and now you have a much more of a bipartisan view on the value of wetlands. And I say all this, Robert, just to say when people go, why do you do this? Isn't everything already predestined, predetermined? And my argument would be, no, you are constantly talking to who's ever in the legislature at the time, hoping to bit by bit change their mind to see the value on things. And if it weren't going to work, why would we be doing any of this anyway? Do you share at least a little of that optimism about the long view of the Wisconsin legislature?
Yeah, I think we can, even in this incredibly polarized environment where you have two parties that are very divided on issues, you can make some kind of progress that way. And there's certainly been some on wetlands, and that is in the public good, because as long as you have a divided government, Democratic governor, Republican legislature, and it could be vice versa in the future, then you're going to have to move certain things, what you can, with agreement of both parties. But I don't want to get overly excited about that, because there are limits, right? We still have a Republican president who is busy gutting all of our environmental laws, and I certainly don't see any Republicans in the state legislature speaking out about that or talking about the state stepping up in order to fill that breach.
No, that's very true. And so, but again, still in the, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take, Heather, when it comes to, let's turn just to education. And where have we left things off with you in terms of the Joint Finance Committee is currently doing its public hearings around the state. And the last time that we had you and Robert on here, it was, you know, what do you want people to say at these hearings? What do you want them to say to their legislators? How would you characterize the way that the budget debate is going right now and what people can be doing to make a difference?
Well, people have turned out in droves to tell their stories and to share their budget priorities at the first two hearings of the Joint Finance Committee, which were held the day after the election on April 2, and then the Friday of that week in the southern and eastern parts of the state. And that committee now goes north. They're having two more public hearings on the 28th and 29th, where people can go up to Hayward or Wausau on the 28th and 29th to testify. And we have been tracking every word of their testimony. If you go to wisconsinnetwork.org/budget, you will see a link to our testimony tracker, where we sit on the other end of Wisconsin Eye and literally write down every single thing that people come to testify about. And the reason that we do that is so that we can report to people what those priority needs were. And here's what we found. Top two issues across the board at both of these hearings are the things that are best for kids, public education, K through 12 and higher ed, and pre-K and childcare needs, and healthcare, specifically Medicaid expansion. And we had more testimony in those two categories than pretty much all the other categories combined, with a bunch of single issue things too. You can see a chart reflecting that on our Facebook page. I just put the link to that in our chat so you can share it with your listeners. And we know that people are in a desperate situation. You've got 2 minutes to share your concerns at these hearings, but when you tell your story in a way that really shows what this means to your kids, your community, your family, and yourself, then that can resonate with lawmakers and also let folks know that our priority concerns are shared across the state, across Wisconsinites, and we expect our lawmakers to share them too when they decide on their priority budget allocations.
It really was an interesting graph to see. It's a pie chart basically based on, you know, what people's priorities were. Robert, no surprise to you that it was education and healthcare that people are, you know, see as their highest priorities.
No surprise at all. And both are greatly threatened. Our schools have been shortchanged for a very long time by this legislature. Healthcare has been shortchanged by not expanding Medicaid, which is the basic thing to do that because 41 other states have done it. But there's even more to be done on healthcare. And a lot of the testimony on healthcare is also terrified of the federal effort to have permanent tax cuts, $4.5 trillion to $6.5 trillion worth of them for corporations and for billionaires, and to pay for it by taking healthcare away from millions of people. So these are fundamental needs. I think what's really important about what Wisconsin Public Education Network and Heather are doing here with tracking everything is you see the disconnect between where people are and where elected officials are. In a well-functioning democracy, there'd be a much closer match. It would matter. And this is not the first legislative cycle where education and healthcare were the top issues, where that would matter in the deliberations of the legislature. And you know something's broken when that doesn't happen, when legislators who are supposed to represent the public don't reflect what the public is actually asking for and wants.
Holy, Robert, you're right. I'm going to look at the chart here. And again, public K-12 education, childcare, Medicaid expansion, healthcare, prisons, farming, municipal service. You know what? I don't see anything in there about trans athletes. You're right. And I don't see anything in there about DEI or CRT. Heather, it seems like the some of the politicians may have one set of priorities, but it really sounds like you've got the people on your side in terms of what they think our legislators should be working on.
Yeah, and this sort of grassroots tracking is just one way that we have of keeping them honest. We want to make sure that the priority concerns that actually impact us in our everyday lives are the ones that we're prioritizing at the State House and beyond too. And if our lawmakers aren't going to do that on their own, then it's really up to us to apply that grassroots pressure for them to do better and signal that we're going to demand better elected officials if they aren't going to pass a better budget. That's why we're so concerned and working closely together across all of these important issues to make sure the budget that does get passed into law is one that meets our needs. As you know well, Pat, we're in year 16 of budgets that haven't even kept pace with inflation for public schools. We have failed to meet the needs of our communities in terms of providing help for healthcare or childcare needs and in so many other areas. And if this budget doesn't deliver on those things, I don't think the governor should sign it.
And we're going to get into that more in a next visit because we've run out of time here. But I know we were talking off air about the potential of the governor vetoing a budget as opposed to a line item veto, or Republicans in the legislature refusing to pass a budget bill unless, you know, they try to extort a larger tax cut for the wealthy from the governor. A lot of that is the kind of the process stuff that we'll cover in another time. But for now, if you want to get any of those comments out to your legislators, the email address again is budget.comments@legis.wisconsin.gov. That's for legislature. And of course, you can also go to the Citizen Action website, citizenactionwi.org. And the Wisconsin Public Education Network is at wisconsinnetwork.org/budget to learn more. Robert Craig, Heather Dubois-Bornon, thank you so much as always for the updates. Always appreciate it. Thanks for all you do. Have a great day.
Thanks for having us.
All right. Thank you. When we come back, we'll talk to Todd Alba, see what's coming up on his program next. This is Up North News Radio on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Who's ready for a palate cleanser? What say we talk about movies? Specifically, a movie about beavers. Hundreds of Beavers. That's the name of the movie. Hundreds of Beavers, named the number 4 best indie film of 2024 by the LA Times. Hundreds of Beavers was filmed during COVID up in the Wisconsin North Woods. No dialogue. Shot in black and white on a shoestring budget. And it did not go right to streaming. it had some very nice showings, including one recently in Milwaukee, where it was screened on 35 millimeter film, bringing analog charm with all of its grainy imperfections. And so joining us today is one of the producers of Hundreds of Beavers, Kurt Ravenwood. Kurt, thank you for being here. Nice to see you.
Hey, good to be here. Nice to see you too.
Look, I never thought in all my years of doing radio that I would be talking about a silent film. And yet here I am with no dialogue and a lot of beavers. And it was the movie trailer I didn't know I needed to see until I saw it. And that's where I'm going to leave it. You're one of the people that did all the, you know, that has done the work to have this movie done and to promote it. And so you, far better than me, can describe, if we go see Hundreds of Beavers in a theater or streaming, what are we going to see?
Well, you're going to see physical slapstick comedy like you haven't seen since the early days. And I think the kind of comedy that we really haven't seen on screen since the Zucker Brothers, other, you know, Wisconsin filmmakers, did movies like Airplane and Naked Gun. The director, Mike Cheslick, who's from Whitefish Bay, Wisconsin, and then the actor and co-writer, Ryland Tews, just really have a big nostalgia for this kind of cinema. Three Stooges, Charlie Chaplin, Buster Keaton, but they're also inspired equally by things like video games and Charlie Chan. So, like, there's all kinds of great influences wrapped up in Hundreds of Beavers. It's not really a truly throwback movie, even though it uses the aesthetics of black and white and silent comedy. But when you watch the film, you'll find that we have a few tricks up our sleeves that bring it to modern audiences.
Yeah, very much so. Because, again, if you were to just see little tiny snippets, you'd say, oh, this is one of those slapstick films from the, you know, the 20s, 30s, whatever the case may be. And then you see some of the effects that are brought into play and you go, oh, no, we're marrying, you know, we're in a time warp here. We're taking something that maybe Buster Keaton would have been the lumberjack, and instead we're making it for a modern era. Now, the synopsis reads, in this 19th century supernatural winter epic, a drunken Applejack salesman must go from zero to hero and become North America's greatest fur trapper by defeating hundreds of beavers. I hope that's not too much of a spoiler alert.
That about sums it up. You know, man versus beaver, man versus nature, man gets girl. It's really a simple story that everyone can relate to. And the fact that it has no dialogue means it translates well overseas. Hundreds of Beavers has played in hundreds of countries around the world in the last few years, and we've been really excited to see how it's rolled out.
And so that rollout did include a Milwaukee showing. So can you tell us a bit about that? You know, again, what was it about the Milwaukee ad agency that had some ideas to, you know, expose people to it in a way that isn't just, you know, go watch it on your tablet?
Totally. So I'm going to have to educate a little bit on how the movie industry works in order to fully tell this story. Sure. So when you make a movie as an independent producer, you are making a movie that is not in the Hollywood system, meaning it does not have distribution. Now, how it used to work is you would bring your film to a film festival like Sundance or South by Southwest and hope that one of these Hollywood people would see your movie, love it so much, buy it, and get it out to the masses. Now, unfortunately, that did not happen for us. While we did play in some really great film festivals, including the Milwaukee Film Festival in 2023, we had no distribution offers whatsoever. We were told it's black and white. There's no stars in it. It's not based on anything that anyone knows. How are we ever going to market this movie? And so, I'm a producer, but for my day job, I produce commercials. I'm in advertising, and I have an advertising agency here in Milwaukee in Walker's Point called SRH. So when we hit a wall with distribution, we had the idea of, well, let's just do this ourselves. We're marketers. We know how to get butts in seats. We know how to market things. Perhaps we can market a movie. And so in 2024, in the very beginning of 2024, we spent 2 weeks driving a van around from Minneapolis all the way to Toronto, screening the movie and one night only screenings all the way. And that two-week roadshow actually caught the attention of a lot of the industry press. So we got a full feature in the New York Times art section, the LA Times covered it, Variety covered it. All of these major Hollywood players were wondering, hey, how is this movie gaining an audience without a distributor? How is this happening? And the truth is, we just knew we had a movie that people loved and had a lot of fun with. And if we could get a theater owner to agree to put the movie on screens, we could pack the house. So that was 2 weeks of showing up in person, doing some antics. You know, our movie features animals that are actually people in mascot costumes. So there was some obvious marketing tie in there. We would wrestle beavers in the audience during the Q&A. And that just generated more and more attention so that we were able to have a big New York premiere, a big Los Angeles premiere. And that just continued to snowball, pun intended, until the movie has shown in well over 300 theaters across the United States over the last year and a half. And we've made nearly $1.5 million at the box office, and we're still going. There are still screenings that pop up every week all around the country.
I mean, this is a little guy, small business, you know, success story of we're so used to everything is locked into, you know, what the corporate way is. And you've got to be in this mainstream lane. And if you're not currying favor, you know, you're never going to be out there. And this is a reminder that, you know, through the internet and guerrilla marketing and everything else, if you're willing to do the work, you can still get the attention, even if you don't start with, you know, all the bells and whistles that other people might have.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we had the right movie at the right time. I will guarantee all of your listeners that Hundreds of Beavers has more laughs per minute than any other film you can find. If you do not feel that way after you watch it, you can have your money back. Just email me. It's a funny movie, and people had not been coming to theaters to get together and laugh their butts off with a room full of strangers in years. I mean, can you remember the last time you were in a movie theater with a crowd and everyone was screaming laughing?
No.
Yeah, right? So that's what, so at the end of the day too, I think Mike and Ryland made such a funny movie that people found, I think, uniquely healing in a way in the kind of crazy times that we live in. And now the coolest thing is it's just developed its own cult following. If you follow us on Hundreds of Beavers social, which is on Instagram, we're on Twitter, we're on Blue Sky, we're on everything we can be, you'll see that people around the world have Hundreds of Beavers tattoos. People are making Hundreds of Beavers merch. I just got in touch with a guy today who has a licensing agreement with Lego, and he's going to make Hundreds of Beavers Legos. The thing is just really taken off on its own. But it all started with, you know, a couple guys in a van just roadshowing it around the Midwest.
Oh, my goodness. And the roadshow has clearly paid off. As I was looking at the trailer, there are a lot of film festival marks here, including one from Atlanta, Kansas City, Phoenix. This is getting attention. It's building.
Yeah. And our festival, it's kind of confusing to follow. Like our festival run, we were able to play in all those film festivals well before our roadshow. And that's what showed us that we had a good movie, right? Like all these festivals were taking the movie in, and we would go and visit them, and we would watch with the audiences. And we just saw like, wow, we know we have a good movie. Why isn't Hollywood paying attention? Why aren't they jumping on board this, right? Like movie theaters are struggling. Movies are bombing. This is the kind of thing maybe people want to see. And that's why, you know, we had the guts to then take it out on our own. But the coolest thing about it is, you know, other than that first 2 week roadshow, we haven't had to show up in person to a single screening. The movie's just kind of carried on a life of its own. And we get frequent requests from people all over the country to play it again in their city.
It is. You might have a better example than mine, but I can just say that at the time when my daughters were teenagers, for them, it was Napoleon Dynamite was this film that I saw the first time. Sherry and I looked at it and we're like, what the hell are our daughters watching? And then, we watched it a second time. And, of course, by the third time, we're quoting the lines. And that, we're probably quoting the lines more than our kids now are at this point because they're adults. And it goes, you never know where that next thing is going to hit, where it's going to connect with folks. Clearly, you're making a connection here somewhat in that vein.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Napoleon Dynamite's a great film. I grew up with that film. The director's having a very good couple of weeks because he directed the Minecraft movie, which is doing very good business, if you haven't heard.
I had no idea. I took my 11-year-old grandson last week. Been talking about that. In fact, I mentioned this morning, I'm sure the 11-year-old's not listening, so spoiler alert, his Easter basket gift includes a T-shirt about Steve's lava chicken from the Minecraft movie because he can't stop singing the song. So again, you just don't know what's going to catch with folks, and you know, you work at it and people notice and there it is.
Yeah, absolutely. If you say chicken jockey to a Gen Z kid right now, they will scream and throw popcorn at you. And you know what? Like, look, I'm going to be honest. I did not understand that movie. I did not like it at all. Nope. But I really find it encouraging to see kids coming back into the movie theaters. I think movie theaters have just really, really struggled since COVID. And I understand that you can watch almost any movie at home. And I also understand it's very expensive to get to the movie theater. So I think it's on us as movie producers to actually put on a show, to make it an event and to make it a fun time, because people are spending a lot of money to do it.
And frankly, again, not to get political, there's always room for comedy. But as somebody who, you know, I grew up with slapstick. I love slapstick. My wife often says that she doesn't, but then I'll catch her chuckling with, you know, something that I'm watching. And I'm sorry. I mean, yeah, I chuckle at all of the Avengers movies, but that ain't a slapstick movie. We need a little bit more of that in our lives these days.
Yeah, I want the healing power of a belly laugh, you know, like a deep belly laughing. And yeah, you don't get that with the kind of clever humor, I think, even from like movies like Deadpool and Wolverine. They're popular, they're funny, but a lot of their humor comes from irony and like self-referential stuff. And I think we're just done with that. And I think it's time to kind of go back to our roots in comedy. And all the movies we're going to work on next are all going to be in that same vein.
Let's talk about how people can see it and who should see it. First off, where would you put it in, you know, is it more of a PG-13 or how would you rate that for parents who are listening going, is this something I want to watch with my kid who is this age?
That's a great question, because we couldn't afford to have the Hollywood system give it a rating. It's cost a lot of money to submit for that. I would call it a PG-11 or a PG-12. So it's right around there. Okay. There is a lot of animal violence, but it's all done on mascots. Keep an eye out for that. Depends on your comfort level. But really, if you let your kids watch Looney Tunes, if you would let your kids watch
Looney
Tunes,
that's what I was going to say.
Yep. You can let them watch Hundreds of Beavers. It's right in that same vein.
And honestly, I think we might be better off if more kids were watching Looney Tunes instead of some of what they're seeing out there these days. So you've had the showings, but obviously, you know, streaming is the big option as well. So there are plenty of streaming options for Hundreds of Beavers too?
Plenty of streaming options. So if you have a little bit of cash you want to throw our way, the way we make the most money is if you buy or rent it digitally on Amazon or iTunes. However, you know, we know it's tough times, so we wanted to make it widely available for free. So it is on YouTube with ads. Don't love it, but you can watch it for free, and Tubi and a bunch of other streaming services. So if you just Google it and follow us on social, you can also keep track of when we do actual theatrical screenings, which we've done a number of, and we will continue to as long as we can.
I'm very glad that I got to talk to Kurt Ravenwood the other day about Hundreds of Beavers, and I really wish I'd known about it a week earlier. And could have taken the 11-year-old to see the Minecraft movie, which we did do, and this one. That might have been great. Tony notes on YouTube that he first heard about the movie from Pete on fantastic movie, and goes on to ask, mascot costumes? Does Dr. Lyerly make a cameo?
I wouldn't be surprised.
I wouldn't have been surprised, except that the movie was made, you know, at least a couple of years ago. And so she, you know, she wasn't as well known for being a former mascot as she is now. So look for Kristen Lyerly in the sequel to Hundreds of Beavers.
Thousands of Beavers.
Should be thousands. Yes. Hordes of Beavers. So again, lots of ways to get it streamed. And again, just a fun thing. I just heard about it on Tuesday for the first time. Been a little busy prepping the house here for Easter, but that'll be, you know, part of our Easter weekend entertainment is to get to see it, since it comes so highly recommended by Tony and by Greg and by many others.
So good.
All right. Well, we have our history lesson coming up right after this break, and then a very busy 7 o'clock hour where we will meet with Joe Zepecki. He's joining us in the next hour, and we will ask him whether or not he's going to get in the race for state Democratic Party chair. And then at 7:30, Emily Berge, who is in the race for Congress in the 3rd Congressional District. We'll be right back.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.